Hey there, folks. Welcome to the edition of Stranger in a Southern Land. I, of course, am your host, Jake Manning. Today on the program, I speak with Normal Dennis, a man who is a co-promoter with me with the All Organic Open Mic. The man is a musician, comedian, extraordinaire. It's all thrown in together in one nice, neat package, but most importantly, he is a good friend of mine. He is a very genuine individual, sensitive, soft-spoken in a sense, which is the complete opposite of what he is when he is on stage. You see a little bit when he walks on the stage, but when he is in the middle of his performances, it is thunderous and unbelievable. And he's in the middle of recording his first EP, and I didn't want to wait for that EP to come out. I was so excited to sit down and talk with him, and I hadn't opened my schedule. And also, too, like, we're doing All Organic Open Mic, which, if you're getting this podcast in a very timely fashion, tomorrow is the December date, December 6th, where the All Organic Open Mic returns at the Evening Muse. So please come out for that. Support me and Dennis and the show that we're putting together. But most importantly, just support Dennis in general. Like, he's just an unbelievable individual. And hopefully after listening to this conversation, you will feel the way that I do. And I'm sure after listening to this conversation, if you walked up to him and said, "Hey, I listened to your Stranger in a Southernland podcast," you would be friends with him immediately. That's how wonderful of an individual Dennis is. And I'm very lucky to have him in my life because he's a very positive person and positive influence. And like, I get into a discussion about, sometimes he's the only person laughing at my jokes. So I always appreciate someone like that. So if nothing else, he makes the king feel very good when he tells a bad joke. That is for sure. But anyways, know what else makes me feel good is being a part of the Shining Wizards Podcast Network. I can't thank them enough for everything they do for this podcast. And make sure you check them out at shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Also, too, if you want to start your own podcast, if there's any podcast services that you want, if you listen to this podcast, yeah, I could do a better job than Jake, or I could do about the same or a little bit worse. It doesn't make a difference. Because if you're going to do any of that, if you're going to start your own podcast or need any podcast services, you need to go to my producer, Don, at dsct.tv. He'll make you look like a pro. He does it for me every single week. Not just here in Stranger in the Southern Land, but how did this get booked as well? So he's your guy, so make sure you look him up at dsct.tv. Very quickly, I want to give you pretty much all of my December dates right now. I've got a few of them, but they're all clumped together, so I'll just dump them all out in one big shot. But like I said at the top of this intro, we have the All Organic Open Mic tomorrow. If you're listening to this podcast in a timely fashion, you know this drops on Monday, and of course tomorrow, Tuesday, December 6th, the All Organic Open Mic returns to the Evening Muse, and the feature performer that night is Todd Riley. And then this Friday, I will be emceeing Chase Brown's album release party. Not too much information about that. I know it's at the Dirty Hippie just off of South Boulevard. Make sure you show up for that. I'll be emceeing, telling a few jokes, and Chase will be playing a little bit of his music, which is on his album. So I'm pretty excited about that. But if you want to see more comedy that I will be doing, I will be performing at the Charlotte Comedy Zone. I will be emceeing December 13th through the 17th. Please make sure you check out cltcomedyzone.com for who I will be emceeing for. So make sure you show up for those shows. That is December 13th through the 17th. And then, of course, on Sunday, December 18th, PWX returns to Cabarrus Arena, where I will be taking on Broken Matt Hardy. Very excited about that one. Matt Hardy is quite possibly the hottest thing going on in professional wrestling today, and I'm just chugging along, just trying to make a name for myself. So we'll see if the immovable object gets what happens when it runs into the slow moving force. So we'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen. It's be very exciting, but make sure you log on to pwxpro.com for more information about that show. And also, too, I should note, I'm not on the show, but I highly encourage you to come out to see Dave Stone at the Evening Muse on December 29th. That is a Thursday, and that show is put on by Monstrous Comedy. So make sure you look up on Facebook for Monstrous Comedy for more information about that show. I highly recommend that you come out to that one. I know local favorite Jordan Scott Huggins will be coming home for that one. He's up in New York right now, and he'll be coming down for that show. And of course, Dave Stone is the headliner for that night. For more information about that show, you can log on to eveningnews.com. Now, when you're online, if you want to follow me on social media, it's very easy to do. All you have to do is just follow me on Twitter at ManScoutManning or on Instagram at ManScoutManning. If you have a question about this podcast, or if you want to become a sponsor of this podcast, make sure you email me at jake at sslshow.com. Or if you're looking for an upcoming wrestling event, or if you just want to spam me or try and fish my account, that's been going a lot on this email account. You can go ahead and do that as well. And that email account is manscoutmanning@yahoo.com. Anyways, without further ado, let's jump to this wonderful conversation with my friend, my cohort, my co-partner, promoter, just all around great guy, very genuine, and may or may not be the president of the Fat Boys fan club. Anyways, without further ado, let's jump to this wonderful conversation with Normal Dennis here on Stranger in a Southern Land. Normal Dennis, is this the preferred form of title that you go by?
Or you can just call me Dennis.
Just Dennis.
Either way.
Makes no difference.
Saying Dennis is shorter, so.
Yeah, because it's one word, not two.
Yes.
Okay. Because I remember you tried to, you know, tell me what your last name was. Like, you signed it off on a list, and I'm like, who is this guy? He's got the weirdest last name ever. This is coming from a guy whose real last name is Fearbach.
Fearbach sounds like someone who's afraid of composers.
Yeah. Fear. Well, it's actually preferred. Fauerbach.
Fauerbach?
Yeah.
So someone with a lisp.
This is why I love you, Dennis.
they don't like lemons.
This is why I love you. I'm not going to hit you. You put your hand up like I was going to hit you. Like, oh, this is why I love you. Bam.
Then I would at least be feeling something. So.
But no, this is why I love you. And I just, no, I'm serious. This is why. You have probably saved many nervous breakdowns in my life, for sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Because, you know, you run the sound a lot for the Find Your Muse open mic at the Evening Muse in Noda.
Yeah.
And of course, we are co-producers of the All Organic Open Mic.
At the
Evening Muse. And there's been many a times, especially at the Find Your Muse every Monday, where I've tried a bit, especially late at night when I'm go up 18th, which is usually where I go.
That's your number.
That's my number.
Yeah.
You know, like Button has given me the mercy rule sometimes, but most of the time I'm going up 18th out of 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like nobody there. And I'm just struggling to make people laugh. And I come up with something that I think is rather clever, very good, well written, and nobody says anything except for you. You give the deepest belly laughs ever. There's been many a times, especially during the 5-minute podcast, you're the only person laughing. And I appreciate that because I'll say a joke, and there's that moment when you say a joke, and you hang it out there, and you're just like, ha-ha.
Yeah. Ta-da. You're like the magician who pulled the bunny out of the hat.
And when nobody does anything, that's when it gets, like, hurtful.
Well, you got to watch the room a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's always a better bet to laugh at a comedian than not. Even if
you're faking it, is what you're telling me.
Especially in your case.
Especially in your case, you're faking. Because no. I know you're a big, strong guy. If I don't fake a laugh for you, I know you're gonna punch me. Like, I'm gonna be the first person that just wrings my neck.
No, man. Like, but you know, if you're in the sound booth and you can feel comedy just isn't really doing it for anybody, sometimes you just kind of rattle the cage a little bit. And make people laugh. Because I don't know if you've ever tried this, but if you just start laughing, even if you don't feel like it, eventually you'll start laughing for real because it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Laughing is just, it's funny.
Yeah.
And that's why people like blooper reels. You're watching other people laugh and you're like, yeah, this is a safe place. I can laugh now. So if you're in a comedy club or if you're in a room and there's no one else laughing, you just laugh. Like, who... comedy happening, like, why not? Like, what are you trying to prove to who by not laughing?
Mm-hmm. This shit ain't funny.
No.
So what you're saying is you faked it every time?
Not every time. The vast majority of times I'm not.
Okay, good.
That I have to tell you, like, good. There I'm I only don't laugh if something's distasteful and you've never done anything distasteful or anything that I was just like, well, I'm not gonna laugh on principle. I always see, like, if the joke is trying to go somewhere, and it's like, that's the punchline, and there was craft in it, I'll laugh. Because I love it.
You're a sweet laugher, big laugher. Like I said, there's been a couple of bits in the 5-minute podcast that you were the only person that laughed at it. And there's a small part of me is like, well, Dennis is the type of individual that's the type of person who I want my audience to be made up of.
Right.
You're very smart. You're a very genuine individual.
Well, I'm a normal person.
Hence normal Dennis.
Yeah. On average, I'm right. You know,
normal Dennis had a better ring than average Dennis.
Yeah. Normal is like regular. Average is kind of run of the mill. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's slight differences. I haven't quite figured out why English does.
Because normal has a connotation that you could slightly turn to crazy, Dennis. Like the idea that there's a mode.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
And, yeah. And like.
There's an 11 on your dial.
That's. Yes. Yeah, that's
there's
it.
An 11 there.
You're establishing it as normal, and then you can go, you know, be even more normal, or you can go crazy. And if you're average, then you won't do that. Average stays in the middle. Normal people act crazy sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's whatever happens to any person, it's probably like normal given the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. If you take all of human action, anything anyone's ever done, it's probably nothing you can do that's really not normal. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a numbers game.
It's a numbers game. But no, oh gosh, I just remember like some of the first times I saw you and hearing the name Normal, and now Normal Dennis, and just the idea like, oh, this guy's going to be absurd. Like I knew that you were going to go to 11, you know, and you have some of the best like comedic like songs that I see you do at the Find Your Muse, and just
thank you,
and just I adore you. Me and Jake Stewart. We sit in the back of the room and we just gush over you.
I am your guys' biggest fan as well. I love you guys. The 5-minute podcast is always like quality control. If nothing else goes right on Monday night, if the 5-minute podcast is in there, at least something cool will happen.
Yeah.
It's nice to have those kinds of tentpole things. Mm-hmm. Like, especially you and Jake. It's like, okay, I can relax. It's not some weirdo who's going to, you know, be bad on purpose, or it's not going to be someone who hasn't quite figured out their craft. You guys have figured it out, and you're trying new stuff, and or you're honing what you have. And I always know that like thought and effort went into it.
Yeah, because usually
that's what I'm excited to see is when someone cares.
Yeah, because it's usually the way we do it. There's usually a kernel of an idea. Like I've a lot of my regular bits now have come from bits that we've done on the 5-minute podcast. And I've taken some tags that he said on the podcast. Like sometimes what I say in the 5-minute podcast is the first time I've said anything on a live microphone.
Yeah.
Like this popped in my head.
Yes.
And that's like, okay, and there's some validity to it. And if it works, or if I make just you laugh, I at least know that there's some potential there. Because it doesn't always work that it's like the most killer thing ever.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, and I just try to, you just got to enjoy the show. You know, try to enjoy things, and it takes as much effort for me to be on stage as it is to be an audience member, honestly. Like, when I'm in the audience, I try to behave in a manner that I know will feed the stage. Like, whoever's on stage is getting energy from the audience, and it, you know, you can create a feedback loop of goodness, kind of. If the audience gets going, and the person on stage can feel it, then they do better, and it feeds back into the audience, and it just goes back and forth. So, you know, seeing you guys do what you do and the craft and thought that you apply towards it, it's exciting, and yeah.
Where'd you learn that lesson? When did you like put two and two together about that?
Well, you know, you'd be in bands in high school and stuff. You play drums for bands, and
Like, is drumming primarily your number one instrument of choice that you play?
Yeah, that's my bit, is drumming. But I've been playing since high school, and when you're in high school bands, everyone's fronting really hard. And, you know, playing music as a teenager is not really about playing music so much as it is playing dress up. and like pretending to do music, and it's kind of a fashion show. Like, you know, what music you listen to is like, it's like, what brand of shoes do you wear? You know, oh, if you don't listen to this band, you might, it's like, well, you're not wearing Adidas or something. So there is a kind of a fixation on that. And the more you get away from that, the more you like grow up, the more you see that people want to be engaged on an emotional and intellectual level. And the more you front, the less you're able to actually view them as not an avenue for your, oh, I'm going to be this guy on stage. The more you view them as people who deserve, you know, something to think about or something to feel about, the more you try to tap in to good stuff. That's where all the juice is when you're not trying to do something and you're just trying, other than, you know, read the audience and cater to them. But that's super complicated.
Obviously, but you've obviously put some thought to that.
Yeah, I don't know. Just it's good to be entertaining for a crowd, and like that be important,
mm-hmm.
and not try to create an image of something of who you are, and use the audience to try to like stoke your ego.
Mm-hmm. But you have an image in a sense, like, you know, that you project, but I feel like it's very genuine to who you are.
Yeah,
like I said, it's turned to like 11, but it's definitely an image.
Well, I mean, then it came about not because I was trying to do it. I'm just trying to be entertaining. So if any image is coming from that, it's the image of me trying to entertain an audience.
Usually the image is you looking like Animal from The Muppets.
I don't ever see myself on stage. I only see the audience.
No, because you, so, like, yeah. Right now you just talking is very subdued, very quiet,
mm-hmm.
You know, just very... not very respectful.
Should I spice it up? What do you want from me?
I'm not asking you to scream the lyrics of Space Race, but I'm not asking you to do any of that. I'm just asking you to be you and have a conversation with me and lock in personally, which we never have a problem doing. But like when you're on stage, like you're monstrous. You're very larger than life.
Mm.
Like,
well, thank you.
Like you're not like. I like the energy that I put on stage. I'd probably always say I'm only bumping up at about 25%. You, I feel like you're turning up about 85%. You know, like you're going all the way to those edges of just charisma, ego, personality, energy, all the things you put out forth for the crowd. Like it's, you're like a completely different person. And it's almost a situation that you snap into that and then snap back into your normal self.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk on stage, you walk up very sheepish and then you snap into this monster and then you snap back. Like you see Frankenstein go back to a normal person.
Yeah.
You see Dr. Joe. That's the thing I always appreciate your performances is you're just very sheepishly getting up there. And then this monster like appears in front of everybody. And it's that moment of discovery of like, oh no, this is a crazy person on stage.
Yeah.
And then you see him go back to, oh no, I'm normal now. I'm normal. And then I go off about my day. Like
it's, sandbagging people. If you don't put on a huge air, if you don't go on looking weird, people aren't going to create within their own minds an expectation. So if you can go up and be as neutral as possible from the outset and then do something weird or something that makes people think or laugh or something, you know, I just like to go from a neutral state and then try to communicate to how many people are in the room, and try to fill the stage, you know? So really, like, you don't take up much space on a stage. And when you're on a stage and there's an audience, you have to project and communicate to the, you know, the volume of people, and you have to fill out the stage. That's why I use props, is it helps, you know, it helps amp up stage. It's stage presence, really. Mm-hmm. Just like having something there that is not you, but it's part of your act. You know, it just helps. It's kind of like a megaphone or something. It's important to me anyways. Poets pick up guitars and play with a guitar and they add music. They're doing the same thing. They want to say something, but it's hard to just listen to someone talking, but it's easy to listen to a song. So poets will start writing music and playing music and you know, they're just trying to get their communication out to more people. And, you know, so simple route, you just get louder and you act bigger and you fill it up.
We've always done that. That's for sure. Like, you know, sometimes people go up and perform and people like to talk, but like usually by the time you're done performing, everybody is fixated on you and what you got going on the stage.
Yeah. That's the object.
Yeah. And you execute it every Monday when I see you do it.
Oh, thank
for sure.
You.
Yeah. Absolutely. But also too, like, you know, where's this idea of performing coming from? You know, like what gave you the bug to do this? Like you said, you did bands in high school, but like, let's go even go back. Like you was a child, like, you know, like what's the dynamic of your family? Are you the kid that always put on the plays in the living room, or where does all this come from?
Well, I'm the baby boy. So, you know, in a household of, you know, four women, it was just me and dad and like my three sisters and my mom.
You know, growing up with girls will make you really sensitive.
Yes. Oh, God. I'm so glad someone understands that. Thank you.
You got real sensitive real fast. For both of us. Because I had two younger sisters and, of course, my mom. And then we kind of adopted a girl who had like a really rough home life.
Mm.
And then we had a female foreign exchange student. So like one summer coming back from college, I had five women in my house.
Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Had to deal with just swimming in a sea of estrogen.
But you were older than your sister.
Yes.
And I'm younger than all my sisters.
How big of a dynamic shift is that?
It's like 3 years kind of exponentially.
But like, what's it like to have an older sister, in your perspective?
I don't know. It's again, like, it would, the dynamics are always going to be different. And I don't know what it would be like to have a younger brother and then maybe like the oldest of the two brothers and then still be
what was it like for sisters. You? Because I don't even know where to begin. What that would be like?
Well, so my two older sisters moved out before I was growing up, and it was just me and my closest sister Dana, and we were homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
If that explains anything. And you know, you just hung out at the house a lot, and you watch a lot of movies, and there would be like long form jokes in movies that I would memorize and tell to people, and I loved telling jokes I'd memorized from like the movie Desperado. Quentin Tarantino has a long joke. And it's a pretty good joke, but it's all in the performance of it and just how long it takes for him to tell the joke. It's like burning up celluloid, and it's really funny to watch. And I memorized that, and I would tell people that, and there was like a few like curse words in it, like piss and stuff like that. So I was like a little kid. You're like 8 telling a joke with the word piss in it, and everyone's just like, oh my, he has wisdom beyond his years.
And then you're like, I fucking right I do.
Yeah.
This guy's a shaman.
No, and then, you know, like I did a church play when I was like really little, like 6 or so, when I first moved to Florida, pretty much. We just got into this church, and I was the captain on Jonah's ship. We were doing the Bible story of Jonah, and I was the captain that tells Jonah, like, hey, the storm's killing us, pray to your God. And I remember just like screaming it, just being like, rah! And everyone in the audience was like, ooh, this kid can yell.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
This guy can yell at people for not praying or for praying. We like this. We could use this later in our church.
Either way, you know, it's nice to scream in a room full of people and have everyone pay attention to you and not be upset about it.
And scream, where's your God now? Ooh, that's like some vengeance we'd like to point in a different direction.
I could have become a pastor.
Could have. God,
that would have been better. I would have made more money that way anyways.
Yeah. As opposed to being a starving artist, you would have been, you know, the next Creflo Dollar or something. But you said Florida.
Yeah. Pensacola, Florida.
I love Pensacola.
Yeah?
Very beautiful. A lot of military people, though.
Yeah, it's the Navy base there.
Yeah.
It's an interesting spot, really. Like, you've got the Navy, so a lot of, like, you know, people from all over the country are moving there, but it's still, like, right in the crust of the crusty beaches area, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
like
the old money that owns condos and restaurants, and they're just like, things are going to stay the same. Nothing new ever.
Don't raise our taxes. Just don't raise our taxes.
Yeah, there's just, like, a bunch of people really resistant to the idea of it turning into a super big town. So it's, like, this kind of, like, quiet, nice vacation spot that not a lot of people... doesn't jump to mind. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to go to vacation to Pensacola. Mm-hmm. They're always like, I'm going to go to Orlando because Disney World or whatever. So you just got to meet a lot of people and also be part of a specific culture, which was nice, like, mm-hmm. growing up there. I love Florida.
Yeah, because it's awesome. Nice beaches, and I remember mm-hmm. like the, you know, it's next to the Florida-Alabama line. There's yeah. that bar that's right on the line.
Yep. Yeah.
Are you aware of the where yep. the bar?
Yeah, well, I've been there before. I used to hang out on that beach, Orange Beach.
Yeah.
Like my buddy had a condo, or his grandmother had a condo, and we would sneak out there and spend the night and just hang out. And you'd go in the middle of winter, and it would still be awesome. You know, you could bundle up and look at the stars, or you could take a hike and just do whatever you wanted to do. And it was like your beach and no one else there. It was just nice to have, like, that kind of an experience with a beach. Most people think of beaches and it's, like, surf and sun and fun. It's like, well, yeah, but a beach can also be, like, freezing cold. You're, like, wrapped in a blanket, going to Waffle House. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, that was my whole vacation there, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
That was my spring break 1 year.
That's awesome.
And somebody told me that that beach, there's, like, this really nice hotel, like, this really fancy upscale hotel that just got put up right around there. And somebody was telling me that Jennifer Lopez would vacation there because nobody would go to that beach.
Right?
Yeah.
Robert Plant or Jimmy Page, one of those two guys, used to hang out in Pensacola.
Okay.
For, you know.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm not crazy for the...
No, no.
Jennifer Lopez and Robert Plant, they would probably like,
keep
talking.
Keep it quiet.
Keep it, don't let anybody know. Because the second we tell Matthew McConaughey, it's all over.
Just put on sunglasses, you'll look like a Floridian. Keep walking. Don't make a big deal.
No, oh, yeah, yeah. Can, Jennifer, they might scream. Chill. They might scream at you to get deported. You know what I'm saying? Like, even though you are Jenny from the block, they're still going to yell at you. All kinds of really awful stuff.
Ouch. That's true. Especially Northwest Florida. It's so hick.
Yeah, that's what people don't realize is Florida is very rednecky, but with a beach.
Exactly. It's not like... I don't know, like California beaches.
Because I grew up totally in the Midwest, different. And we always viewed Florida as kind of like California, like very laid back, very, you know, progressive, and, you know, very like, hey, it's a vacation place. And all those magical and wonderful things happen when really, like, there's some asshole driving around a Hummer into a Panera Bread with an alligator in the back seat, you know?
Like, yeah. And all the beaches, like, there's no, like... Like, you have to, like, go hiking to find, like, a laid-back beach. Everything else is, like, concrete blocks, like, butted up against it. And it's just, like, it's, you know, owned by a bunch of rednecks. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. And then there's all these shopping malls, and they're mm-hmm. trying to industrialize it. And then, like all these northerners come down, and they want, like, northern stuff. And there's all these chains that are normally in New York and Connecticut, and they just end up in Florida.
Yeah, the further south in Florida you go, the further north you go.
Oh, I never heard that one before. Yeah.
So by the time you hit Miami, you're like in Boston-y kind of spot
mm-hmm.
for going up and down. We're going to use that. It's no good. Let's keep going.
Keep going.
What else? What else is up, man?
Oh, well, speaking of up, when did you get to North Carolina? How old were you then?
24. Yeah.
Well, how did you end up here? Like, how did you just appear in this area?
Oh, you know, I had family living here. Nothing was really going... There, you know, Pensacola's too small to really, like, do anything in other than kind of be part of it. And I just, you know, this was a spot where I knew I had family, so if things went terribly, I could have free room and board for a few days while I figured stuff out.
Because mm-hmm. that's always a key, too, because I'm over here with none of that.
Yeah.
I was like, this could go sideways real bad.
Yeah, man. You're a braver man than I.
Well, I wouldn't say I was brave. I was probably dumb enough. I was also in, like, in a really bad relationship, so I was really trying to find a way to get away from that.
Well, you had the right incentives, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is either like stick around and get a domestic abuse charge up against me, or like move as far away from this woman as possible. You know.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
You made it out.
I made the better choice.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
You didn't have that, but you had the security blanket.
Yes.
But what was your plan of coming here, and what was your, just, you're just like, hey, it's just a place. I'm just going to go.
Exactly. It was just a place, and I was like, well, I'll try something else. Mm-hmm. I've lived in Florida enough.
Yeah.
Let's see what else.
What was all, was there ever a plan or an inclination of like, ah, this is what I want to do, or what do I want to do?
Nope.
Nothing. You had nothing. You just wandering around, just like,
seeing what suits my fancy.
Just
I don't know, man.
A nomad picking up. Did you have a stick with like one of those little bags that had everything, all your belongings
the checkered
in it?
Bundle at the yeah. end of the stick. Yeah.
Did you just follow the railroad tracks here?
No, I drove a U-Haul.
Okay, long railroad tracks with the the stick and the checkered napkin over your shoulder the whole time.
The stick and napkin were there in spirit.
Okay,
not in truth.
You weren't stealing pies off of windowsills
on the way here? God, I feel like I missed out on a lot of those kind of experiences. Man, I should just start hitchhiking west, see what happens.
Yeah, I've been looking at homeless people and being like, man,
that guy's got it made.
Yeah, I do. I was like, he's got it figured out. Like, I saw a homeless guy today. He had a crash pad in his shopping cart. I'm like, oh, he sleeps on that. He's gotta be living the life. I pay over $1,000 for this place and it's falling apart like a month. He's got a $20 crash pad that he found in like a dumpster.
Yeah, I don't think I could be homeless. It would be too much work because you have to hustle, man.
A little bit. I mean, figuring out where you're gonna poop is like the biggest concern I've heard.
That's in and of itself. That's a hustle. I'd do without that.
Yeah, but I think about it in the sense that, well, you wouldn't be eating that much, so you wouldn't be like pooping all that much.
True.
And my thought process is that I would have a gym membership, so like I could get a shower, a workout in. I've got a place to hang.
Right.
And also too, like, you know, if you get one gym that's got Wi-Fi, you get on the Wi-Fi network. You could be on the treadmill, going through emails, typing up, doing whatever business you had to do.
How has this not become more of a thing? Why aren't there more homeless people just hanging out in gyms?
I would totally do it. Like, looking back on it, like, I didn't realize how lucky I was when I was homeless. Like, I really did not take full advantage of my time when I was homeless. Like, I was in such a rush to have an actual roof over my head as opposed to sleeping on the sofa in my office, where really I should have reveled and enjoyed every minute of that.
Yeah. Hey, man, you got to have priorities and you got to go towards what you...
Well, my problem was I was trying to pick up chicks, but I was like...
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you can't pick up a girl like if you don't have a home, you know? Like, that was my problem. You can't come back to my place if I don't have said place.
That's where you work in the take me home.
Yeah. I should have been more pathetic. Like, you know, I have no place to stay. So obviously I'm already in like Flint. You let me cross through your threshold, you know. It's like a vampire. Now you can't get rid of me. But yeah, like homeless people, I think they got to figure it out.
Some of them do. I mean, some of them love it. Yeah. Well, I'm sure most homeless people are not homeless by choice, but there's a sliver of that population that just digs it. They're just like, yeah, this is my dream come true.
Well, the thing is, too, you just got to survive.
Yeah.
Through the day. Survive through the day.
You did it.
Yeah. You know, and also, the big issue is always, like, getting the address. Like, you can't get a job because you don't have an address.
Yeah.
And, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's, like, the big issue. But if you could find a way around that, like, if you had a job and, like, hey, can you get my mail delivered here? Boom. There you go.
Yeah.
And then you spend the rest of your time when you're not at work wandering around. Or you take a couple naps at work and they're like, man, this guy's working hard. You know, staying late, you know, like... You're getting overtime in.
It is hard to nail the job interview when you don't have access to a shower.
But that's where the gym membership comes in.
Yeah.
See, I'm figuring, I'm telling you, Dennis. Dude. We're coming up with a plan on how to be homeless.
What we should do is just become homeless. I'm fully ready to commit to this. Not at all.
Oh, gosh, I keep thinking about it.
Oh, jeez.
It's doable.
It's doable.
I definitely
People
feel like
do it every day.
Yeah, I feel like it's doable.
We're all like one bad week away from being homeless.
That's what I keep trying to explain to my girlfriend. My girlfriend's like, no, we're doing so great. You know, like she's very much a girl that believes the glass is not only half full, but it's three-fourths full.
Yeah, it's fuller than it really is.
Yeah. I, on the other hand, don't see the world that way.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. So what type of person are you?
Yin yang. I am I'm the guy who says, half a glass of water. I ordered a cheeseburger. And you just wait.
Half a glass of water. You're going to bring me a glass of water that somebody else has already drank out of?
I demand a refund.
Some asshole is walking around with half a glass of water in his belly right now, and all I get is half? You know? That's how I look at it.
I personally am a glass half empty kind of person.
Somebody's walking around with a half a glass of water of my water.
Yeah, it could have been mine.
That's how
now all I have is this measly half a glass. It's a half of it's gone.
It's probably a rich guy. He's like, I get half of this water.
Dude, the rich, they're the problem with everything.
Yeah?
You can trace it all. You can always trace it back to successful people for your misfortunes. Anyone's misfortune. Mm-hmm. Just blame success.
But tell me a path. Which rich guy is holding normal Dennis down?
Okay, so The owners of the media conglomerates that shape the opinions that people have created a culture wherein it's difficult to appreciate art that is honest, that wants to connect on an emotional level. More specifically to my direct emotional state. So because the media is catering to a different audience than who I am and am able to put out there, it's the media's fault that I'm not doing better with the audience. And there's rich people who own the media, and they're out to get me. That's all there is to it.
Well, that's a very artistic Donald Trump way of looking at it. Yes. You know, but hey, with that type of attitude, you can be president.
Right?
New America.
I just need to attack the media hard enough and get people to like me because I'm outrageous. And then the world is your oyster.
Exactly.
And then you build a dark tower. Fortify it with tanks.
Yeah, but then that spoils the whole homeless plan.
The tower is so big that you could just kind of live in it and feel homeless.
Okay.
Like, once you have enough wealth, you can own a city with which to be homeless.
You can make the inside of the tower look like outside.
Yes.
So, okay. As long as you make that small concession.
Yes. You have to make enough money to build the tower first, so.
Yeah, goal number one.
Yes. So, riches lead to eventual homelessness. That's my new path.
Because imagine being like a homeless guy and you get to eat wherever you want.
Yes.
Because you have the money.
Exactly. If I could just own a small city and just kind of eat where I wanted to within it, you know, it wouldn't be so bad being homeless.
You wouldn't have to clean up any dishes. No, wouldn't have to do, dude. You know, whatever.
Dude, well, other people would make dinner for me. And on holidays, they would, like, give you even more food than usual. So I wouldn't even have to, like, I wouldn't even have to worry about, like, getting a good Thanksgiving dinner. Someone else would just do it out of the kindness of their hearts.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I'm sold on this whole homeless thing. We're going to figure out, like, a plan for people to be homeless. Which I'm sure in the housing crisis that happened a few years ago, people would have welcomed a book that had all this information that we just spilled out on a free podcast. It's a free podcast, Dennis. Free.
Well, I mean, that's we're one step closer to becoming homeless, is not making money. Mm-hmm. So, good for us.
Yeah.
Either way, we win.
We win. Mm-hmm. But anyways, how do you want to make money with the rest of your life? Like, what are you working towards? You said you didn't have a plan when you moved here, but you're here.
I do have a broad idea, you know, either teaching or writing or, you know, definitely communicating with people and trying to learn from them and to teach them what I know. Mm-hmm. So that we can be more, you know, brought together. You know, just bring people together. If there's a way I can do that and make money, like, I would, I'll, until I figure out what it is, I'm going to try to continue to communicate with people until I can monetize it. But I feel like I'm still on a learning stage. And if I never get to make money doing it, like, well, then I'm just another normal person. Because not everybody gets to do what they want to for a living. But you can work towards it and have thoughts and feelings that, you know, lead you down the paths that you want to go. And if you can make money doing that, then, like, kudos. You're doing it. And if not, still do it. Like, it would be nice to make money doing what you love, but you should still do what you love even if you don't make money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're definitely going about that route. Like, you know, you just started recording an album, or you're in the process of it. Like,
yeah, I'm recording an EP right now.
Yeah,
and that's just, and that's it's good to view as a musician. Like, I have a problem. My problem is that I don't have my music recorded that people can put into a CD player and just listen to.
Yeah, they have to be at, like,
they have to be at shows. That's a problem, because I want to communicate with people, and then you get to solve a problem. You get to work together with other people who are also interested in communicating, and who also, they bring you a broader scope. And that's why I'm really glad I'm working with Eric Button of Dollar Signs, and Eric Schmiel of Dollar Signs, and Dylan Walkman of Dollar Signs. They're all helping me out. They're a band. They know what works and what doesn't. They've recorded. They have more experience. I'm learning a lot from them, and they're influencing the actual music that's going on it. So it's not just you know, I don't want this to be like this is the normal Dennis EP, blah blah blah, like me. It's like, no, like, this is something that I was able to get help with, and now it's a thing that you can listen to, and, you know, I had a part in it, which, you know, that's all I want to do.
Well, you said the music on it. Do you have more than music on it? Like, do you have some of, like, your comedy or some skits or some other things?
There is going to be one skit, and I'm glad you asked, because this directly involves you.
Okay.
I want, This is weird to say on a podcast before the album comes out, but I want to do it anyways, because who cares, right?
Why not?
Yeah.
We're breaking all kinds of norms.
I want you and Jake to do a middle of the EP podcast.
Okay.
And, like, do it in the style of the 5-minute podcast. Like, the first three songs, and then there's, like, another three songs after the first three, but right in the middle, you and Jake do a podcast about what you've heard so far,
mm-hmm.
and what you expect to hear on the rest of the EP.
Okay.
It's like a minute and a half long podcast. And, like, as a skit. And you guys are funny. So I want you guys to, like, listen to the EP for the first three songs, and then I just want to record a podcast of just, like, direct line. Like, literally your first impressions and what you think is going to happen next. And just drop it in the middle of it.
Like, ooh, this guy's got problems.
Exactly.
When I heard normal Dennis, I thought I was getting a normal individual. I was wrong.
Or you'd be like, well, you know, I thought that the first song went over pretty good, but then it dipped in quality. And, you know,
he got very angry very fast.
Yeah. Anything you want to do, like, that's your spot. You get to have a podcast on my EP if that's cool.
Yeah. You're listening to the 5-minute podcast. We'll even do it like the NPR voice if you want to. We'll become some fake podcast thing. You're listening to the normal Dennis podcast. You've broken into.
We've made it to the middle section of the EP.
Intermission, if you will, if you'd like to get fancy.
Now, Jake, I'd like to ask you, how do you feel about the first half of this EP so far?
Well, I'm deeply concerned for the mental psyche of the individual performing this material. When they said normal Dennis, this was implied that, and he's not the crazy version of that, but I feel like somehow we've been led astray in this process.
It's going to be one of the most normal things ever, too. Like, yeah. It's going to be a party album, so it'll be just dance music.
Probably. Yeah.
Probably. Hang out, dance music stuff. It'll be just, like, very normal.
Very normal.
Well, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully people will get it and love it. But where are you at in the process right now? I just couldn't wait to get you on here for it. Like, I would have put it out when it came out, but I was like, nah, I really would talk to you and stuff like that. So I figured I'd call you in here today.
Thanks, man. That's cool. and I'm glad I got a chance to talk about it on a multi-platform basis.
Yeah.
So now,
but like, where are you at in the process? What, like, when are we looking to release? When are we looking to finish?
We have recorded a lot of the drums. There's a lot of drums on it, and
because that's your mode of operation is drums.
Quite a bit of percussion. Even the music, even the bass, it's treated like a drum. Even guitar, it's still a drum. It's all rhythm stuff and singing on top of it, or you know, rapping, or you know, whatever you want to call it. What I want to eventually have happen is, you know, get a pressing and do an EP release show and create a package, so stickers and t-shirts and stuff like that. I've been kind of like, you know, in the music scene in Charlotte, I haven't really been able to immerse myself because I still felt like the act needed work. I didn't want to start printing off t-shirts when it was like a half-realized thing, or I just didn't feel it was ready yet. But now I kind of get more what I'm doing on stage and how people feel about it in general and who my potential audience could be. So I feel like it's now time to start testing those waters.
Yeah, and that's important because I've a wrestler, have printed t-shirts way too early.
Yes.
In my career. Actually, my first printing I sold out, but like my second printing of a tag team that I thought was going to last for quite some time,
yeah.
I spent $1,000 on the t-shirts because I got a lot of them. Tag team broke up 6 weeks after they came
in. Man, and t-shirts are not refundable.
Yeah, I know. It's not like I can use them or do anything with them. Like, I just can't put an X in it. Like,
a regular shirt. Just scribble that on every
Or just take a Sharpie and make it an all-black t-shirt. Like, I can't do that anymore. Like, it just not happened. So yeah. I'm currently still selling t-shirts of this tag team that hasn't existed for like 4 years now.
Can I get one of those?
I could gladly give you one for sure.
That's awesome.
It's kind of creepy looking from what I've been told.
Oh.
But I think it's cool.
Well then, I mean, I trust you. I think you have good judgment on this.
You wear Clinton Orr's t-shirt. I'm sure you could wear this t-shirt.
Yeah, totally. So, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a non-joke shirt. I love it because, like,
I do too. I like it.
There's absolutely no context. It's just a cat with a leash, and it says, "Are you walking your cat?"
Yeah.
It's an anti joke, but people are just like, it just makes just enough sense, or just people like have thought about walking cats on a leash.
It's unusual enough.
They see the shirt, they're just like, "Huh?" they don't even know why they're laughing. It's just funny, and I love it.
Yeah,
it's a great shirt.
I agree. I love mine as well.
I'm going to go home and put it on. Stand in front of a mirror and be like, damn.
This is anti-comedy.
This is anti-comedy at its greatest.
Yeah. Well, I should have asked you this at the beginning and stuff like that. But like,
Way to go.
Yeah, I know. I really messed up the whole flow of this thing. So like, you know, maybe I put a preface on the intro, like, hey, start in the last, like, 10 minutes, put that in the front instead of the back. But, like, was Andy Kaufman, like, a big influence for you?
I think I watched one Andy Kaufman special, and I was like, I can never watch this guy again, or else I'm just going to kind of feel like what I'm doing is no good. Because he does, like, archetype stuff. Level stuff, the style of comedy he does and his approach and everything was just so good that it's like
you'll never feel good enough.
Yeah, I don't even want to like look at it because it'll I think I'll just like start subconsciously ripping stuff off that he did.
You'll be too derivative.
Yeah,
I
would be afraid to like experiment just on my own ideas because I would like. You know, I would see parallels with what he did. And that's something that, like, he had one bit where he would go on stage and bomb on purpose and then tell the audience that paid good money to see him, like, I feel like you guys are laughing at me and not with me. And then he would, like, break down in tears and leave the stage repeatedly. And then eventually he would come up and, like, he would be so distraught and in tears. He would just start talking in gibberish and start pounding on his bongos incoherently. Mm-hmm. And then he would turn it into like an awesome song. And then he would speak jibber jabber nonsense for, it's just like, it's so good. So I saw him once and like never again.
Never again. I can never see this.
I can't.
Because this is what I want to be.
It'll ruin it. Yeah, it'll ruin it for me.
You'll just think everything you're doing is hacked to that.
Exactly. It's like a lot of guitar players don't like listening to Jimi Hendrix. That's not true. All guitar players like listening. Doesn't matter. It's just a personal thing.
Well, there was a story of somebody was talking about like when Jimi Hendrix like showed up in London,
mm-hmm.
that this famous guitar player was like in the front row, but it was like a show that had like Eric Clapton and a bunch of other like really legendary guitar players, you know, in London. And like one of them came walking from the front from the stage to the back and saw one of them. And he goes, I had to get out of there. Yeah. It's a flood up there of all the guitar players crying because they'll never be as good as him.
It's so brutal. Yeah. Sometimes when you see someone who's so good, it's just demoralizing. And then
I felt that way about wrestling. I saw C.W. Anderson do a match. It was like a 6-man elimination match.
Mm.
And it was just so masterful. I was like, I feel like I need to quit wrestling.
Yeah.
And the thing is about that, like this match just happened a couple of years ago, and his prime was probably like about 10 years earlier. He was going to Japan. He just gotten through ECW. I think he was like hired for WWE a short period of time. So kind of like his prime and era of him making a lot of money and his like height of his career is already like 10 years past. But like he still wrestles today. He's in excellent shape, and it's just a true craftsman of his work. And I saw him wrestle just a match in front of like just 500 people, and he was so masterful that I just remember watching it. And for him, it was just another day at the office. But he was so perfect and so precise in everything he did. I was upset.
What exactly do you like in terms of craft? What is that you look for in another wrestler that you want to be impressed by? Like what aspects of it, you know, really make you go, huh? That's good. Like when I see a guitar player, and he'll go out of the key of the song in order to emphasize lyrics or something, I'm always like, oh, that took craft, executed it flawlessly. Like, what are some of those things in wrestling?
For me, it's precision in the little things. Mm-hmm. The punches, where to place stuff, the no wasted movement, the psychology of the matter, like. It's just sometimes how he holds a head or grabs an arm, like the little stuff makes sense. Yeah. And those are things I've always stuck with myself. Like I just had a match with not recently, but this was 2013, 2012.
It's pretty recent.
Yeah, fairly recently. But I've wrestled this guy much more recently, mm-hmm. Cedric Alexander. We had a match and we were just like, you know, put it together, but we didn't know what we were going to do to start with. I'm like, hey, let's just kind of wrestle around a little bit. Well, us wrestling around, like people were saying, oh, that was so good because you guys were so precise and you were timed very well. Well, that was part of the reason because like I helped train him very early on in his career, so I knew his exact timing.
Yeah.
And for me, like I felt like it was kind of when I was like towards the end of being at my best physically.
Mm.
Like I'm a little more broken down right now. When I wrestled him recently, it was a little bit more of a car wreck than it was a technical masterpiece.
Right.
Where I felt like at the time, I felt technically I was right on point where I needed to be timing-wise, especially with him. And it was just the little stuff in the beginning that you weren't even planned, and we're just kind of going out there doing it and feeling it and just experiencing it. And those are, to me, the things that I pick up on, the flawlessness, being in the right place at the right time, being aware of what else is going on, and being able to highlight them, make their stuff look good, and at the same time having your stuff look so crisp and so sharp.
Mm.
Like it's just a myriad of things, and it has to be that entire package.
Yeah.
Because if there's like, if one thing comes up, like if his punches aren't all that great, if this didn't look quite right, or if he looked like he was unaware of where he was in the ring at that time, like I see it right away.
Yeah. And it's if you have enough of those moments kind of added up, it's like a subliminal, this is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes with any art form. If you have like one too many things off and just the right, it's precision, you know. So that's interesting. And I don't get to watch wrestling very often, but when I do, you mentioned no wasted movement, and I just thought about that, and I was like, oh man, I never really thought about that. But now I'm thinking about it, like whenever I watch wrestling, yeah, there is like, they're trying to make it to where every single thing they do has like weight, and you know,
like the guys that are really great,
yeah,
you can see that in them, and the guys that are very not as good or big and clunky,
yeah,
you see those wasted movements and a lot, like his leg was over here and he just kind of hit the guy and he didn't know where his other limbs were going to be.
Yeah,
body control,
yeah,
is very important as well for me. So
that's a trip.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
But what about musically, like who inspired you? Who are you listening to? Because, and this is a question that I was thinking as I was driving over here, I was like, I gotta ask Dennis this question, because like You know, obviously, you know, the type of music you play, you're kind of all over the place. And, you know, I could see the influences of Andy Kaufman. But as far as musically goes, I'm very curious, like, who inspires you? Who do you listen to? Who you always stick to? Because for me, music is just almost kind of background noise. Like, right. I go through phases. Like, right now, I'm in a phase where I'm listening to Wu-Tang Clan and Elvis Presley.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah,
those are the two people I'm bouncing between right now as we speak. A few months ago was Prince, and it was David Bowie, obviously, because all, you know,
they
passed away.
They died.
You know, but like I've also been floating around with like Warren Zevon. I've been floating around with just Alkaline Trio is always my go-to, Jawbreaker is my go-to. Like I just float around to these weird, but who are you stuck on? Who are you like, you know, what are some bands and some musical influences that you have?
You can like something, but it not influence your music. And so I try to like as many different genres as possible, just so that, you know, you get to hear as much music as possible. I don't like getting caught up in a specific genre or, but I will get like hung up on like a specific group, like something about them, like do it for me. And I'll,
no, like who were some of the people in most recently?
Like, I went through a Prince phase recently, just like, and I'd never heard Prince before, and then I bought Purple Rain like 2 weeks before he died. I was like, I want to give this a shot. And I listened to it, and I was like, this is, I was not expecting it to be so good and to be so interesting sounding and weird. Like, a lot of 80s rap. Love it. I'm obsessed with it almost. Like, it's precision, it's funk. And it's, again, like, it was early enough to where they weren't trying to be anything in particular. They just knew that you could talk over funky music and it would sound really cool and be really interesting. So you get to see, like, the evolution of when it was in the golden age where they were first doing, like, oh, I can do poetry and actually talk about really substantive issues and it still be on top of something that will really make you want to move. You
know? And they're doing it with, like, music of its time, which was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? The music at the time was awesome. And they were doing it with music, you know, from before. They were pulling a lot of their music from funk records and so then you want to listen to funk.
Even like old disco records that didn't have a lot of substance, but then when they're coming in with their lyrics, it brings that substance to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. And that's what's really cool. Like, you can always just kind of have a baseline of dance music, and it's what you say on top of it that makes it into thinking music. Because you can just, like, if you just heard the music on a Tribe Called Quest album, you'd want to dance. But when you're just hearing the lyrics, it like it makes you just want to like sit and think really dancily.
Mm-hmm.
You're just grooving in your own head, you know. Beastie Boys were masters of that kind of thing, where there's a whole package of saying just enough interesting things to keep you like engaged, and your brain is like dancing with the lyrics, and then your body's dancing to the music. So, yeah, that kind of thing. I'm a big Beastie Boys fan, and I'm a big Fat Boys fan, Wu-Tang Clan. This is all the old greats, Public Enemy. It just keeps going. So much good stuff.
What about Zappa? Did you ever get into
Yeah,
Zappa?
I did. That was more like my college period.
Yeah, I got one Zappa album in college, and I just wore it down to death. But then, like, I listened to another one. I'm like, oh, this is completely different. And I don't like this at all.
Yeah, he was cool like that. He was always doing something that he hadn't done before. He never was like, I'm Frank Zappa and I do this specifically. He was always just on the lookout of just like, well, we did that. Let's do a straight up like jazz fusion album because I can. All right, did that. Let's do a really weird bluesy album. You know, nothing really stopped that guy from doing what he wanted to. And he had a wide enough breadth of knowledge of different music genres that he could just kind of dip into what he wanted to do and then do it. But since it was him, it always sounded like Frank Zappa.
Yeah, and that's the genre change. That's why I think it was always interesting about him. Like, some people, like, you know, you just like one CD of his or two CDs, but then, like, it's very hard to like the entire catalog because it's so wide and varied throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, the same thing with the Beatles. I think any of the great groups have that kind of dynamic. The Beatles started off doing like lovey-dovey songs, and then they got weird, and then they got bluesy, and then they got bluesy weird. You know, they were constantly pushing their own envelope. They just happened to be pushing all of music's envelope too, because they were that good and it was the right time and everything. But, you know, I've never met anyone who loves the Beatles like front to back. They usually prefer the love songs from their earlier days. And they think everything after that was like stupid, pretentious, you know, hippie shit. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who are like, no, I only like their psychedelic albums, like later on stuff. I can't stand that pop music. I love all of it because they were just skilled.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of craft went into that. Another big, I'm a big fan of the Beatles and Steely Dan. I find that, a lot of people like try to be audiophiles. They try to listen to as many people as possible, and like so they can memorize like everything. And then they're that guy at the party who knows like all of the music. And since he's heard so much music, his opinion about music holds more weight. And I've always been more of the school of just like, if you find something, just listen the hell out of it. Like, listen to it, really get it in you. And you know, so I've been fixated on. All you like the Fat Boys' first album. I've just been like listening to it for about a year solid, almost like once a week. I'm hearing that thing, and I just it's something about it. So I'm like I gotta get this in me. It's weird.
Yeah, I remember we used to stuff pillows underneath our shirts as kids and then just lip sync over it. That was my childhood. Little white kid in Iowa. Just lip syncing to the Fat Boys.
That's so funny.
Fat Boys.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Fat Boys.
I'll show that song to people and they're just like, so this is like really old rap, right? I'm like, yeah, it's really old. And they're just like, it's just like funky hangout music. Like, nothing's really happening. I'm like, yeah, man,
that's
nothing,
what it was. That's
nothing
what,
needs to happen. Yeah, it's just background. It's just that's, it's just funk music, like chill.
Well, that was I think there was like a documentary or like I heard like a podcast on like, you know, how rap got started. It was basically just, you know, you had the longer song because they would just put records on and they would rap over it, and the idea was these parties where they were where the rap was happening was just parties to bring people in and sell hot dogs.
Yeah.
You know, the people that were putting on the music and were DJing and doing all the thing, they were also were selling concessions of this thing.
Yeah.
They just want to have the best party so they can get more people in to buy hot dogs.
To buy hot dogs. Yeah.
And stick around longer and buy concessions. So it doesn't change. You know, that's, you know, one of the best, like, musical outlets and art forms there is was basically started to just sell hot dogs in a sense. You know?
From lowly beginnings, the great things can happen.
Absolutely. But we are getting very close to the end here, Dennis, I can't let you off the hook without asking you the million-dollar question that I ask everybody when I get him in this room, lock the door, and there's no escape, and there's no running away from this answer.
Okay.
But the answer is different than everybody else. I've never heard the same answer twice.
Okay.
And I'll challenge you on it.
All right.
Tooth and nail.
This is built up a lot. Yes. I'm excited.
And it's basically about the topic of success. What does it mean to you? Is it clearly defined for you? Is a dollar amount attached to it? Do you know what it is? Are you chasing it every day? Is it something you obsess about? Is it something that wake you up in the middle of the night? Is it something you're not worried about? Is it something you ever think that you ever achieve? Like, are you worried about it? Thoughts about it? Basically, when I say the word success, what pops into your head?
Good relationships with people that I care about. Relationships that aren't built on obligations or financial issues. Just relationships with people that I respect and who respect me. If I can have those for my whole life, you know, then I'll feel like my life is a success. Because if I can be someone's friend and they can be my friend, without it being an exchange or without it being not an exchange, it's always exchange, but like without it being it's like, you know, when you buy something, without it being not a purchase. I'm losing my vocabulary. I'm losing my perspicacity. If you can have just good, loving relationships with people and have it be...
Without having conditions and transaction.
With transaction. If you can have a relationship with someone that's not transactional, that's built on mutual admiration and respect, it doesn't matter how much money you got because you can't really take that with you. But you can die peacefully knowing that you didn't screw anyone over and that you didn't associate with people who were out to get you. You know, you choose who you want to spend your time with. And if you can just choose, and that's where the onus is on me to have success, is I have to choose, you know, who and with to spend my time with and how to spend my time with them. And if I can do that in a way that makes me happy and makes them happy, then that's success to me.
So it's about people in a sense and having the relationships in the sense that you've touched people's lives that they want to be around you.
Mm-hmm. And I touch their lives to where they want me to be around them. Like, you know, that's a big part of anything is that, I mean, that's transactional in theory, but if it's really just practiced in love, it doesn't feel transactional, you know?
But no dollar amount attached to success,
not
fame,
really
success, goals.
Most of my goals are just about like establishing a manner and mode in which I can live a life that I feel is clean and free of being a worthless eater, free of being someone who's a mooch or someone who, you know, I want to make my own way, at least cover the expenses of being me without having other people cover it for you. But also be a part of their life and just enriching people and being enriched by people. And if I, like, you know, if shit goes down and I have to move to an island with like 50 people on it, if I can be friends with, you know, a few of those people and live a life on the island, no matter, like, if, you know, there's no amount, the economy of the island's not big enough for me to get rich or anything or become, you know, it's not going to blow up, but if I can just have good relationships with the people who I'm with and around and be someone who they need and who they
value as a tribesman.
So I don't know. It's hard to get away from it. I just try to follow love. I try to, you know, it's something you have to work on. It takes effort. So I'm going to work towards that. And if I get money, that'd be cool too. Because you can buy stuff with it. That's where you can exchange things, you know, goods and services for money. So money comes in handy. If I want to buy a burrito later, I can't buy it with love.
Mm-hmm. Gosh darn it. When you take a bite into a good burrito, it feels like you just bit into love. Like, I'll tell you that. But Dennis, where can people get in contact with you so they can send love your way? Like I said, your record's still probably a considerable ways away from it being out, but if you know kind of where they need to be looking to look out for that, you know, please spill that information right now for everybody right now.
If you hang out in town and you look at flyers that are on the sides of venues and restaurants, if you see the words Normal and Dennis on that flyer, that's where I'll be next. And then you go to where it says to go on the flyer, and I'll be there.
So look at flyers, no online presence or anything you want to get out there?
No, I don't have a whole lot of online presence. Again, I don't have any recorded material, so having an online presence before you have something people can listen to is kind of pointless. Right. So we're building it slowly, and right now I'm only on a live basis.
All right, well, tell you what I'll do for you. I'll be your secretary. If anybody like digs Dennis, want to know where his album is, get in contact with me at ManScoutManning on Instagram and Twitter, and I will point you directly at the direction of Normal Dennis.
That's awesome.
So I will be your press secretary until the time when you have a place like that. Okay?
when I can be my own press secretary.
When you can be your own ADR agent, I think ADR, HDI, or whatever.
HDMI.
Whatever. You know,
HD DVD,
you know, RCA,
Sony,
SYC, you know, connector, you know, whatever. But I'll be, you know, anybody that wants to get in contact with you, I will.
That's cool. And you in the direction. Yeah, like if you Google Normal Dennis, I think I come up. And you type it into the search bar on Facebook and limit your results to Charlotte, I come up.
Okay.
So just knowing a few baseline facts and having a competence at the internet will eventually lead you to me, I think.
Yeah, you don't have to be a super stalker to find you.
No, it's not difficult.
All right. Well, Dennis, thank you very much for saying
that. Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
This has been a DSCT.TV production.